Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of Roman innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Donald Trump supporter Doug Ibindall, Ted Cruz supporter Tony Perica, John Kasich supporter Ron Sandek, and Marco Rubio supporter Christine Svensson. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Nice to have you with us this evening. And again, we received word late this afternoon that our phone lines are not working this evening. So we will be moving to email. The email is brucedumont@museum.tv, brucedumont@museum.tv. That's the preferred way to participate in the program this evening. And again, we thank you very much for joining us. Also, you can join us on the World Wide Web at beyondthebeltway.com. That is both the audio and video version of the program. There are 2 days to go before the big Michigan and Mississippi and Idaho primaries, and 246 days to go before Election Day. This evening, the country is mourning the passing of Nancy Reagan, the former First Lady. A little bit later on in the broadcast, we'll be talking about Nancy Reagan. But again, tonight we begin with what's happening in the news today and what happened in the news yesterday. Politically, a big, big day on Saturday in many states throughout the United States. First of all, let's go to Kansas, where in the Republican caucus, GOP, it was Ted Cruz with 48%, Donald Trump 23%, Marco Rubio in third place at 16%. For the Democrats in Kansas, it was a big win for Bernie Sanders, 67%, to Hillary Clinton's 32%. Heading south to Louisiana in the big GOP primary, it was Donald Trump in first place with 41%, Ted Cruz 37%, Marco Rubio at 5%. And for the Democrats, it was Clinton 71%, Bernie Sanders 23%. And in Kentucky, the horse race there had Donald Trump in the win position. The show position was Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio in the third position, win place and show at 17%, I should say. That is in Kentucky. That was a caucus. And in Maine, of course, this was one of the surprises. Ted Cruz won the Maine caucus with 45%, Donald Trump 32%, and John Kasich finished in the running there at 12%. And in Nebraska yesterday, in the Democratic caucus, it was a big win for Bernie Sanders, 57% to Hillary Clinton's 43%. And by the way, before we go off the air this evening, we are likely to get maybe some final call on the Democratic caucus taking place in Maine. And also this afternoon, Marco Rubio had something to cheer about. He hasn't had much to cheer about lately. Again, he won the Puerto Rican primary in Puerto Rico. And again, that represents 23 delegates for him. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about what is happening this coming week. But so much has happened this past week. And I want to get tonight we have representatives of the four campaigns in the Republic. This is all a Republican show tonight, not too much about the Democrats tonight. We're going to talk about those that are still in this race. They're down to four. We're down to the final four. And I want to begin, first of all, with Doug Ibindall. He's the Trump supporter. He's been a guest on this program a number of times. Would you agree that last night wasn't a terrific night for Donald Trump? It was clearly a mixed bag for him. Would you acknowledge that?
That's fair to say. And I think that's actually good, because I think that I do not want to see Trump supporters get lackadaisical. And I think it's good for Trump, too. I think it's a little kick in the behind to stay motivated. I mean, if for any other candidate, it would have been a super huge victory last night. I mean, he won won the only primary last night in Louisiana. And then of the three caucuses, Trump won the largest one in Kentucky. So, I mean, for anyone else, it would have been a huge win. But Trump has changed the rules so much, has raised the bar so much. For him, it seems not as good.
Christine Svensson, you are a Marco Rubio supporter. Would you acknowledge that yesterday was a very bad day for your candidate?
It was not a good day, yes. I agree with that. From a tactical standpoint, at this point, what I would like to see is, of course, Marco has to win Florida. And I know we can sort of, you know, gloss over the little Puerto Rican victory, mm-hmm. but Florida has an enormous influx of Puerto Ricans these days. So right. I think that does bear well for him. on March
15th. So it may help him on the 15th.
Correct.
It'll help him today, but on the 15th as well.
So to be truthful, though, now, from a tactical standpoint, I want Rubio to win Florida, and I want Kasich to win Ohio.
Tony Pawlenka, you are our Ted Cruz delegates. Supporter this evening. It was a big day for Ted Cruz yesterday.
It was a great day. I think that the amount of delegates separating Donald Trump and Ted Cruz is now down to about 80. I think Cruz is at 300 and Trump about 380. So the gap is getting narrower. With the upcoming elections before us, I think that the gap is going to narrow some more. The establishment seems to be coalescing around Ted Cruz as the alternative to Donald Trump. And I think that momentum is going to be building.
I disagree with that.
I want to hear from our Kasich supporter, and then I want to come back to how the establishment is rallying around Ted Cruz. But, again, Ron Sandek joins us. You are one of the co-chairs of the John Kasich campaign here in Illinois. Yesterday wasn't a great day for John Kasich either.
No. I don't think he was expecting it to be a good day at all. He's been playing the away game much of this early primary and caucus season. Ohio is where, you know, John Kasich will either take off or
drop out.
He's been very clear almost from the get-go. He has to win Ohio. I think he will. I think Christine's right. We're going to see if Rubio can hold serve there. It's very important. I think his candidacy is on the line in his home state. And I know Cruz is trying to play there.
That's right.
It's a very interesting dynamic as things kind of elongate. The Midwestern states, starting with Michigan Tuesday, I think play a pivotal role in this overall balance of what's next for this nomination process. Michigan can be a trendsetter of sorts or not.
And you're going to get to Wisconsin and Indiana a little bit down the road. But I want to come back to your suggestion, Tony, that the establishment may be beginning to coalesce around Ted Cruz. Where do you see evidence of that?
Well, I see statements that some have made directly. For example, if you look at the latest news within the last couple of hours, Mitt Romney and others who would be considered establishment politicians or former politicians are saying that the better alternative would be Ted Cruz by far to Donald Trump. So there are others, I think, even someone like McCain, who had differences with Ted Cruz on the Senate floor for other reasons, are beginning to understand that Ted Cruz has the momentum, that he's accumulating delegates, that he's winning states, that he's going to be winning some more. Whether he comes second or third in Florida, he's going to get, I think, enough peeled away from Rubio. That's the main thing, to have Rubio not win Florida.
Yeah, that's the goal. I
mean, that's the goal.
And he's opening, what, 10 campaign offices?
10 offices are being opened, and more probably
than 10.
Whereas
Rubio, I don't think, opened any offices in Texas, did he? Very few?
I don't think so.
Okay, how do you feel about that? Was that fair? That's all fair is in love and politics,
right? I wish the Cruz weren't doing this. And I'm a huge Cruz fan. I mean, he's my number two guy, and I agree with him on pretty much every issue. I just like Rubio better as a candidate in the general election. But I wish that and Krauthammer said this, and I think he's right about this. The other three have to divvy up the rest of the electoral votes. So like I said, I'm fine with Kasich taking Ohio, Cruz takes Texas, Rubio takes Florida, and we do a convention food fight.
All right, we're going to talk about that when we come back. Thanks very much for joining us again. There are no phone calls this evening, but again, we are taking email comments at brucedumont@museum.tv, or if you want to tweet me a question, it's @Dumo. I do see that we have a line one on there. I don't think the phones are working, but come back shortly and we'll see if it's working. Back shortly.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago.
It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back, and yes, this is, you know, doing a live radio talk show is a dramatic experience, and we are now told, allegedly, hold your breath, that the phones may be working. So let's go to Carlos on line one in Houston, Texas. Carlos, are you there?
Yes, sir, I sure am.
Okay, then call us at 1-800-723-8029, but go ahead, you're our first caller of the night. I understand you have a suggested ticket.
Oh, you know my ticket, Trump, President Cruz, VP, it's going to happen. It's going to happen because, number one, there's no way.
Carlos, how big a house do you have?
Oh, about three bedrooms.
I'm going to bet the house. I'm going to bet the ranch that there will not be a Trump-Cruz ticket.
That's a safe bet.
But go ahead. Make your point.
I'll take some of that action.
Go ahead.
And I will take that bet. And I'm going to tell you why I'll take that bet. Number one, there's no way Cruz is going to get the top of the ticket, okay? Because little Marco, the bimbo that you got sitting in there that's supporting him, little Marco is going to lose Florida, and Trump is going to run away with this. And Cruz, the kryptonite of Trump is carcass, and there's no more carcass state. So Cruz is going to lag behind.
So when Donald Trump alleges that Ted Cruz is not qualified because of he was being born in Canada, because of that, and the fact that he's constantly referred to him as lying Ted Cruz, he's a constant liar. You think they will put aside that rift and they will join together?
I think Trump went heel on him, and he's going to put babyface, and they're going to tag team together, and they both know that the populace out here want them together. They may not like each other. Reagan and Bush didn't like each other.
That's true.
After that primary, and they got it together. And these two know that the movement, that Trump is the spearhead, and Cruz has the philosophy.
Carlos, I respect, okay. I give you a lot of credit. You are correct about the top of the ticket, but it is not happening. That the ticket is, I guarantee you, I do not speak for Donald Trump, but that is no way is that happening.
Well, here's
Carlos, we're going to move on. Thanks very much, Christine right. Svensson.
What I'd like to point out to Carlos is, what does Ted Cruz bring to the Donald Trump ticket? I don't see how that helps him. He needs to bring diversity.
He's going
to
get Texas.
If you don't have
anyway.
Texas,
how about
you're
policy?
In trouble. You have to have Texas. No, you have to win Ohio and Florida. You got to pick John Kasich or Marco Rubio.
Now let's talk
or
about
Carly
John
Fiorina.
Kasich. John Kasich said on George Stephanopoulos today that the idea of a contested convention could be fun. It could be a learning moment for the young people. They would see how politics works. Maybe they turn off TVs and forget watching the Kardashians. But is that not the strategy? There has to be a contested convention, and John Kasich somehow comes out of that either as the president or a running mate for any of the other three.
Look, brokered conventions don't happen often,
right?
And that's for a reason, and usually by design. But nothing about how things have gone on so far in this presidential nomination process, and this includes the Dems, by the way,
right,
has been conventional. There hasn't been one thing, and I think Doug probably likes it. I think Trump people think that's what this is all about, is engagement from the bottom up. And to that, I think Trump has been miraculously successful and helpful. That also means we may have a divided convention. It's possible. Look, I still think it's more likely than not that it doesn't occur, but there's definitely a path.
Can you think of a scenario, with just the five of us right now, can you think of a scenario out of a brokered convention, nobody walks in there with a majority,
right,
that John Kasich, who will, I think without question, will walk in with the fewest delegates, maybe second fewest to Rubio, but I think probably the fewest delegates, that he ends up as the top guy when he is the ideal candidate to be everyone's running mate?
Bruce, the dynamic is different at the convention than it is right now. And the question at the convention is, who beats Hillary Clinton? Let's assume she's the nominee. I think it's all but a coronation now. But who beats Hillary Clinton? Now, Mr. Trump likes to tout polls all the time. Well, the polls are darn clear on that. Kasich is the runaway winner on that one-on-one match.
No, I disagree with that. No, that's not right. First of all, there's lots of polls that show Trump winning in November. Number two, there are polls out there that show Bernie Sanders beating every Republican in November. Polls in a general about the general election now, which we're not even
are
meaningless.
But Doug, in July of this year, there are going to be polls, and there will be matchups with all four of the candidates that are still alive.
And the question is going to be polls.
And what are they going to show? What will they show? In your view, you think it will still be Trump winning over Hillary Clinton?
Absolutely. He hasn't even started on Hillary Clinton yet. The Clintons know, the Clinton attack machine knows how to run against one-term senators, and they know how to run against an incumbent governor from Ohio who was at Lehman Brothers when it went bankrupt. But they have no idea how to run against Donald Trump. They have no idea. They are terrified of him.
You've mentioned the magic words. Isn't Lehman Brothers the one piece of the resume that John Kasich has that the vast majority of voters don't know about?
That he opened an office in Columbus, Ohio.
Is that a negative?
Everything about your past when you're in elected office or a TV reality star is game for criticism.
Right.
But the question is, before we went off on this Ibindal rant, who is the best candidate in a general election?
The only thing that matters.
Can I ever get finished before you go on?
Let him finish.
We're not supposed to take on the traits of our candidate.
I'm going to let everybody respond because I think everybody has a case to make that there is a poll out there that says their guy beats Hillary. Go ahead.
Your question was about a brokered convention, which I still think is unlikely. Is it possible? Yes. The question at a brokered convention is who can bring the party together and win in the general election. The question isn't what happened and why we're here. It's who's the best candidate.
Quick question, just on that point. And I want to start with you, Christine. Given the level of venom that has been spewed by Rubio to Cruz, Cruz to Rubio, everybody to Trump, would you acknowledge that the candidate who has least likely ticked off everyone else is Kasich?
Oh, I agree.
Okay. Sure. So Kasich could Kasich could be everybody's number two candidate, right?
He's auditioning for the vice presidential.
Here's the problem. The only polls that matter, we've had 19 states so far. I'm not counting the territories. We've had 19 states so far. That's the only real poll. And the Republicans have had a voice, and they have said they've delivered John Kasich not just losses, but huge landslide losses in every one of those states. And then to say that somehow, and first of all, it's actually not a broker convention. It would be a contested convention. That's what the RNC rules say. This idea of a broker implies that there's some honest broker, and clearly that wouldn't be the case.
But Mitt Romney.
It would be a contested convention. Every 4 years, some Republicans are always speculating about a contested convention, and it never happens. I don't think it's going to happen this time.
Does everyone at this table agree that if the RNC, through shenanigans, whatever it is, rule changes, if they try to bring on a fifth candidate and have that fifth candidate be the nominee,
It's not going to happen. That won't work.
Literally, you have four people that could be walking out of that convention.
Priebus has talked to this already. The idea that Mitt Romney was going to swoop in, that's already gone.
Or Paul Ryan, that was the other dark horse.
No, that's not going to happen. Bruce,
I think there's an outside chance that could happen.
Tell me
about it. What?
Oh, I don't think it's likely, but it's certainly possible. So for Rubio or Kasich, their only path to victory is to win during a convention fight. Cruz still has an outside chance to actually beat Trump in the delegates. You know, he's still in that race.
Math,
but the other two are not.
Him.
Right. But they could get enough to siphon off, and then Trump won't have the states, you know, the majority in the eight states that he needs, et cetera, et cetera. So what was your question? I'm sorry.
We're going to come back. We're going to go to Sean in Cleveland, WKBN, listening out of Youngstown. Nice to have Youngstown back with us. Go ahead, Sean.
Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to talk to all of you.
Thank you.
I'd just like to make a quick comment here. You know, I'm a Trump supporter, and I turn on the TV. The media never stops trying to smear Trump. Mm-hmm. While oddly, though, the media never seems to mention the fact that Ted Cruz's wife is a Goldman Sachs VP.
So?
And she worked at Merrill Lynch. And wait, I'm not done. Rubio, his former roommate, ran a gay porn business. And number three, Kasich.
By the way, let me just interrupt you on that. The Washington Post story on that did not come to the same conclusion that you have just shared with our audience from coast to coast.
The Washington Post did not
come to that conclusion. You can make your other points, but let's move on. Although we are rumor and innuendo, and this is more than rumor and innuendo, because it did appear in the Washington Post, but that is not a fair characterization of Marco Rubio's past roommate. Let's move on to another subject.
Marco Rubio's two biggest donors are Norman Braunman and Paul Singer. Both of these men are vocal advocates of mass illegal immigration and gay marriage. So, in reality, Marco Rubio, he's not a conservative. He's a communist in sheep's clothing like everyone else.
A communist? He's a communist?
Let me move on to Kasich. Kasich himself cashed in his congressional connections by going to work for Lehman Brothers, whose collapse while he worked at triggered the 2008 financial crisis. Everybody except Trump is totally bought and paid for by the Zionist banksters. And Trump.
Thanks very much. Goodbye.
I'd like to disavow that call.
Yeah, I was going to say it was going really well for you until the end.
That call. Record. All those want to disavow that call. Okay, go ahead.
But on the Lehman Brothers thing, even a broken clock is right twice a day. That is toxic for John Kasich. I mean, the fact that he was. Didn't he just release his tax returns? I mean, over on this on the year that
yeah
that,
he released
on
his,
the on the year that
let's wait till Trump
can,
does
please
his.
Can I please I thought don't interrupt
we have
on
to
the on the year on the year I've that got, Lehman gonna, Brothers I'm, tanked I'm the
gonna,
economy
I've got to go 1-800-723-8289 we have commercials to run calls they are still working 1-800-723-8289 let's see if we can raise the level of the callers we're dealing 50-50 now with reality give us a call.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago a little bit later on in the broadcast. We're going to get a live report from Michigan about their big primary coming up next Tuesday, along with Mississippi and also Idaho. And again, a little bit later on in the broadcast, we'll also be talking about the life and times of Nancy Reagan, former First Lady who passed away this afternoon at age 94. Tony Parayka, you are here. You're a former county commissioner. You are in Cook County, which is where this program comes from, third largest county in the United States. And you are also a Ted Cruz supporter.
That's right.
Have you always been a Ted Cruz supporter? And what is it about Ted that excites you about this?
Well, campaign? I was initially partial to my fellow Croatian-American Kasich, Governor Kasich from Ohio. And I love him still. He's a great man. I've known him for at least 20, 25 years now. But I felt that Ted Cruz brought together elements of personality, background, education, fortitude, a spine, to be other than a milquetoast candidate like we had in John McCain or Mitt Romney, who, you know, tried to please or move to the center or even to the left of center, please the other side. And we need someone who's going to stand up for basic constitutional principles here. And Ted has shown that time and time again, that he is a constitutional scholar, that he's one who supports the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, that he's not afraid to stand up to Mitch McConnell and the other deal makers in the Senate, is willing to take the heat. He is talking about eliminating IRS, flat tax, abolishing Obamacare, doing all the things that I believe are necessary to be done.
A political question. right now, one would say that in every contest thus far, the Republican turnout has been massive, significantly better than what the Democrats have had.
Right.
So there's something that's going on here. I think the media is basically saying the one that's expanding the pool the most is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And the competition between Cruz and Rubio, that's part of it. But Trump is getting the credit, if you will, for really expanding that base.
Right.
The premise that Cruz moves forward is that if he was the nominee, and there's some people that don't think he can be elected because he's too rigid,
mm-hmm.
that he will bring out conservatives that have never voted before, and he will expand the base as well. Do you believe that? And exactly, give us an example, if you will, of any state where he has already done that, where he's expanded the conservative base.
Well, I think if you look at all of the states that Ted Cruz has won so far, beginning with Iowa and then going through Texas, Oklahoma, other states that he has won, typically they were close primaries where you actually had Republicans voting in Republican primaries. It wasn't, you know, anybody who shows up can come in and vote, mm-hmm. which open primaries provide an opportunity for people like Democrats and independents to come in. And I think that there's no doubt that Donald Trump has increased the level of awareness and participation in this primary process. But let's not forget, this is only March 6th. We're getting all hyperventilated here and talking about, you know, what's going to happen in November. That's forever in politics. Lots of things can happen between now and then. But Cruz definitely, I believe, has the background in terms of his education, training, you know, working for Judge Rehnquist on the Supreme Court. All of those things, the credentials are there, and he believes what a conservative believes.
Christine, Marco Rubio has said that I'm the most electable. He said it from get-go. He obviously is not demonstrating in the primaries or caucuses that he can win much, although he's won Minnesota and he won Puerto Rico today. There's not been a lot for him to really get excited about in this campaign. So my question to you is, how does he expand the base? How does he win a majority race and expand that base?
Well, I mean, he has the natural, one would think, the appeal to the Hispanic voter. That, to me, should
Where
have been.
Has he done that?
He hasn't done it yet, but that's what we were all
What's
hopeful
What's he waiting for?
I don't think he's waiting for anything. I think he has reached out to them, and so far
but
he hasn't
Donald
gotten
Trump
the reception.
Donald Trump won the Hispanic vote in Nevada.
It's stunning to me. It's absolutely stunning. I don't have an explanation for these things.
That was easy for
But how does he win then?
It's going to be really difficult, but I will say this. The states that are upcoming are ones that favor Rubio. I mean, you look at Minnesota, that is more akin to the state of Illinois. I mean, we are going into Marco territory in the upcoming, you know, the Michigans, the Illinois, the other ones. And, of course, as we said, he has to
Bruce,
I want to hear Ron Sandek about the ability to expand the base because, again, recent polls have suggested that Kasich would run well against Hillary Clinton as an 11-point lead. Most Democrats that you talk with say that Kasich is – they like Kasich, which sort of is the kiss of death along with those 30 newspaper endorsements he has.
That's true. Yeah.
But again, how is he expanding the Republican base? Because he has to expand the Republican base
Bruce,
to win this thing.
He's done it. Look, he's had two career – well, first of all, you don't win a bellwether state like Ohio. And you don't win it with 62% of the voting.
I totally understand. You look at John Kasich on paper, he should be light years ahead of everyone. But the question is, now you're taking that resume and you're sending out to the public, and somebody people would say is that, you know, John Kasich is too nice, and if they're looking, if the talk show listener, which is making up part of Trump's base and Cruz's base, to some extent Rubio's, but to a lesser extent, if that's what this electorate wants in 2016, how can Mr. Nice Guy expect to win when he hasn't been winning anywhere?
Well, here's the thing. He's been, as I said before, he's been playing a long game here. He doesn't have the resources of the other candidates. Absolutely true. He's been playing strategic. He obviously made a big bet in New Hampshire. By and large, it was a return, you know, that got him somewhere. He's laying it all out in the Midwestern states. And he's been trying to, as the field, remember, it was 17 people, and I think there were 8 governors in it. He won the governor's land. There were some talented, good governors. He's the last man standing there. His audience now is getting wider because there's only 4 on the stage. And we saw last week, he gave a great performance while some of the crazy was going on. And these debates have been so disgraceful and just weird.
Well, it's easy.
It's really weird. Yeah. But the fact is, Kasich has been the guy who isn't attacking anybody that wants to talk about crazy stuff like policy and expanding, you know, the employment opportunities, jobs, and making our country.
But the vast majority of those who watch those debates, who may decry them as you've just decried them, the vast majority of those people, I mean, like 90% of those people are voting for someone other than John Kasich.
That's so right. Far. But remember, these are prospective, right?
The last debate.
Remember, this is. Again, like to Tony's point, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
You know, it's easy, a marathon. It's easy to, Doug.
Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say it's easy to stand up on stage and be Mr. Positive and tell the story again about like in the rocking chair and tell the story about your postman father. That's very easy when no one's attacking you, when no one's yipping at you, because no one sees them as a serious force in this thing. But the simple fact is, it was actually fascinating. This weekend on McLaughlin Group, Eleanor Cliff, you know, far left liberal, after railing on Donald Trump and, you know, racist this and all this nonsense and how bad he is, McLaughlin asked, well, Eleanor Cliff actually volunteered that of all the people on the stage, Donald Trump is the only one that she would consider voting for, or possibly John Kasich. Now, what she probably doesn't know, and probably what a lot of people don't know, I wonder if Mr. Sandek even knows, for all this talk about Kasich's appeal to moderates, he is actually, look it up, it's actually stories all over the place in Ohio. John Kasich is actually known as one of the most pro-life, anti-abortion, signing legislation to put abortion clinics out of business, which, yes, I agree. Absolutely. That should be a great issue in a Republican primary. But notice how he never talks about it in the debates. Notice how he
because
never
he's
champions
the
that.
He's running
because
to the middle.
Yeah. Speaking of running to the middle.
My point is, when
run,
once people yeah, find yeah. out about that, it all changes in the general.
Let's go to Carl calling from Lima, Ohio. Go ahead. You're listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You want to talk about Governor Kasich. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm coming from a Governor Kasich event that I just attended in Toledo.
Okay. All right.
Well, it was well attended. A very positive message. I'm a former Marine and a small business owner in Ohio. And I can tell you, Governor Kasich's message of we're Americans first and Republicans and Democrats second is true. And I would point out that a lot of the increased turnout in the Republican primaries, a lot of it's due to Donald Trump on the one side, on the positive side, but also on the negative side. A lot of those people showing up are showing up to vote against him, okay? He has super high negatives. John Kasich doesn't. Eventually, I hope that people will come to a better realization than my fellow caller from Ohio just was. That was an embarrassment. I'm sorry for the Buckeyes.
Thank you for saying
that. That's okay. We got another Buckeyes coming up from Youngstown, Ohio. Tom, listening to us on WKBN. Right, go ahead. Thanks, Carl. Go ahead. Tom, you're on the air.
Bruce, good hearing you back here again.
It's great to be on the Big 57 every Sunday night.
First of all, this race is really down to Trump and Cruz from a practical point of view. Mm-hmm. And if Cruz is the nominee, the Republican Party are going to lose the people that Trump has brought under the tent. If Trump is the nominee, not only will those people stay and vote for Trump, but he will get some of the Bernie Sanders people. And if he said he was going to nominate Ted Cruz as Supreme Court, then chances are he'd keep a lot of the conservatives. In addition, if you were to take the comparison between the tax program that Ted Cruz wants and what Trump wants, by comparison, I think more people would vote for Trump, as well as the way they want to handle the deficit. Cruz really wants to slice a lot of the government, as well as entitlements, Social Security and Medicare included. Trump wants to grow the government. And I think those are winners from Trump all the way around.
Growing the government is going to be a good thing? I don't see that as
growing the economy.
Growing the economy.
Okay. I think it's a legitimate argument he wants to grow the government, though.
Can I also say...
Last 10 seconds to you.
I was listening to another program today where Bill Powers, who was the Republican chairman of the New York State Committee there, put Rudy Giuliani in, says that Trump could win New York.
Okay,
we got to pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo, @DUMO. Back shortly from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. I do want to ask everybody, starting with you, Tony, what was your reaction when you heard Mitt Romney's speech last week?
I thought it was uncharacteristic for him to be that blunt and negative towards another individual. He always struck me as a Mr. Positive towards everybody. So the fact that he came out as strongly as he did and called Trump a phony, a liar, a fraud, I thought was very unlike Mitt Romney. So it was a stronger message as a result because it was uncharacteristic for him to do so.
Ron Sadick, your response.
I didn't like it. I thought it – I know what the intent was, and I thought it was going to maybe cause a contrary reaction. I don't know. I don't know if there's any numbers. I don't know how you attribute anything to it. I agree with Tony. I thought it was uncharacteristic. I thought it was unpresidential-like. I know he's not the president, but he was the party nominee. I just didn't think it was necessary.
Christine Svensson, your reaction.
So I'm a Romney fan, but it was not a good idea. There was a huge backlash. It was a big failure. And frankly, he looked foolish because they have the clips of him 4 years ago, you know, basically hugging Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And would you also say that maybe the big loser was Marco Rubio?
Oh, that's interesting.
Because again,
it's true.
Rubio would you would think is I mean he is sort of the establishment guy at the moment. I know he hates that label, but the reality he is. And
I think one could actually draw that conclusion. Yeah, that's what that's what seemed to happen.
You know, hypocrisy.
Well, I most agree with Christine. No surprise on this one. I thought it was sad. If Mitt Romney really wanted to hurt Donald Trump, he should have endorsed Donald Trump. I mean, this guy, I don't know if it's jealousy or if he's afraid that Donald Trump is going to take on Wall Street and change the rules so corporate raiders like him make less money. I don't know, but I mean, for the guy who insulted 47% of America, basically calling them lazy moochers to get on his high horse and preach about
Donald Trump is
ridiculous. Republican Party is still trying to rebuild from the damage that Mitt Romney did. He turned off. He insulted 47% of America.
Bruce, I mean,
I think that Donald Trump has probably insulted about 80% of the Americans so far. Let's count the disabled people, Chinese people, the Hispanics, the Muslims, the women. I mean, who's left who has not been insulted by Donald Trump?
All those groups
but
he's winning.
I think that one thing that went around the table here a moment ago is hypocrisy. And I think hypocrisy is the worst sin in politics. And certainly, Mitt Romney's coming after taking Trump's endorsement 4 years ago shows that kind of hypocrisy in politics. But it's nothing new. And, of course, the hypocrisy of Rubio running on a platform in Florida that he was going to be strong on immigration and then flipping and becoming a Gang of Eight member and pushing with Schumer an immigration bill is fatal to him in Florida. He's going to pay the price for it in the Florida primary. And, of course, Kasich, who took Obamacare and expanded in Ohio, Mr. Conservative, did not go well in the conservative circles.
How do you argue, Tony, with people that say that if you want a country that accomplishes things, you have to have someone who is a president who's willing to compromise?
Well, I think
there isn't anything in his background that suggests that he would perpetuate gridlock. And now, if you like gridlock, Ted Cruz is your guy, but a lot of people don't like gridlock.
I like gridlock. Okay. And if President Obama, yeah, because nothing gets, they can't cause you any harm. And the first rule of politics, medicine, law is do no harm. And these people do serious harm to citizens, and they pick our pockets day after day.
Politicians
but
there are bridges to repair. They really say do no harm?
No harm, yeah.
No, politicians?
It's the Hippocratic Oath, yes.
I thought that was medicine.
I thought it was medicine. Well, I don't believe it was politicians.
No, it applies, I think, to all professions. Mm-hmm. At least because of your contact with someone, you should leave them even marginally better off, not worse off because they have met you. You know, that's the idea here.
Well, you know, I think that's
Christine, I want to ask a quick question to you, and that is the debate last week, which got down and into the gutter on issues that were initially brought up by Marco Rubio. When Marco Rubio decided to get tough, do you think that the beneficiary of his toughness against Trump was Ted Cruz? It did not help him. It helped Ted Cruz.
No, I don't agree with that. Rubio did well last week.
How did it help him?
Well, maybe.
Where did it help him?
Because we are going to go into the states that are good for him in a couple of weeks, and it will help him there. I mean, it's more of a long-term effect that we'll see, I believe. Rubio did really well last week. I was really impressed
and
pleased. He went toe-to-toe with Donald Trump, and I beat him at his own game.
But the point is,
Voters disagreed
with that. I mean,
Trump was way up.
The media
Trump
agreed.
Trump was starting up here, so he already had a built-in advantage.
But by attacking him,
it helped Cruz. It did.
It helped Cruz
because
Cruz attacked him at a much higher level. He still attacked him.
Policy differences
that,
rather than
more of an intellectual
schoolyard.
Cruz did well.
Thing.
No, I agree with that.
I would disagree. I think that those kinds of tactics are going to hurt the person who is flinging that kind of mud. And I think Cruz was a beneficiary of Rubio's attacks on Trump.
I don't think Rubio was all just mud, though. I mean, he went substance with
Trump.
He called him on a lot of things.
He brought up Trump University, which I think is a valid issue.
Totally fair
game. And it's one that we're going to hear a lot more about. And I think we'll hear a lot more about it if he is the nominee of the party.
That's true.
Right now, if Donald Trump is the nominee, would you support him, Tony?
I would have a hard time supporting him, but if it's a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I would have to hold my nose and vote for him, yeah.
Christine Johnson.
I'm the same.
Ron.
Look, I don't like any of those choices, which is why I'm hoping that those aren't the choices. I don't know. Gary Johnson might be on the ballot, right, as a Libertarian?
The key is to win.
Right.
The key is to win here.
So I guess I don't like the taking the lesser two evils because I'm still in the evil realm. I'm hoping one of these three gentlemen bump Trump off.
Trump last night in his press conference, and I think the idea of having a press conference on election night is a really good idea, introduced by Donald Trump. I think he's better in that than he is, even though last night you couldn't hear any of the questions because they didn't have microphones for anybody. But I thought that his presentation style...
That was on purpose.
Well, I know. Well,
exactly.
But he handled it well, and I think the point is he made a very clear and serious case about a third party and what it means for the future of the Supreme Court. I thought chapter and verse, he gave every bit as good a presentation about the importance of the Supreme Court as Ted Cruz has traditionally done. On that note, we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bernie Sanders at 40%. Again, for those Democrats, there's probably nobody that listens who was a Democrat tonight because there is a debate going on. But let us head to Motor City in Detroit. And Dick Hafner joins us. He is the news director of WJR, one of the great radio stations in America. And Dick, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway this evening. There's a lot of focus on what's happening in your state. Based from where you sit in Detroit as a news director of a major station, can you detect any movement towards any one particular candidate in the Republican field at the moment?
Yes, strictly on anecdotal observation.
Yep.
It's actually another poll, and I'm not sure the value of this particular poll. It's a pollster that I haven't heard from, but that poll and anecdotal observation around here shows that Kasich would be moving up on the strength of his performance during the Republican debate in Detroit. And also, Bruce, Kasich has rolled the dice here in Michigan. We're just a state just north of Ohio where Kasich, everybody knows that Kasich must win Ohio to keep his candidacy alive. But he has to make a good showing here in Michigan. And Kasich has been campaigning night and day. He's got TV, radio ads. He's done everything that he could here in Michigan to move up, and there are indications that he is. And I expect to see a poll tomorrow in the state of Michigan showing that Kasich at least has moved up. Does he move up enough? Who knows?
Tell the audience from coast to coast, Dick, break up the state of Michigan for us. We know it's a very large state, but where are the political pockets of strength, be they for conservatives, liberals? I think most people know the inner city of Detroit is heavily Democratic. But on the Republican side, what does that state look like geographically and politically?
Well, on the Republicans, you've got a big pocket of Republican support in the northern suburbs of Detroit. The further north you go from the city limits of Detroit, the more Republican it gets. But then you hit Flint, and that's a big, heavy Democratic stronghold. Also, the city of Saginaw is a Democratic stronghold. A couple of other smaller cities in Michigan are Democrats. But then virtually the entire rest of the state is Republican. You get up into the Upper Peninsula, which is it's as empty as Nevada is in some spots. It is mostly Democratic, but there are not a lot of voters there. So outside of Detroit, Flint, a couple of other cities, this is a Republican state. And also, Bruce, we have a Republican governor. A lot of people across the country have now heard the name Rick Snyder because he's associated with the Flint water emergency.
Right.
But also in this state, we have a Republican state legislature. So we have a Republican governor, a Republican state legislature, and a Supreme Court, which is also majority Republican. So
is there,
I think that goes against the reputation a lot of the state of Michigan across the country.
Is there, within the elected officials of the state, is there anyone of sort of a brand name Republican that has endorsed Donald Trump?
No. A brand name Republican? No.
What has Governor Snyder done? What has Governor Snyder done?
All he has said is he's going to support the Republican candidate.
Okay.
He's staying out of, and I'm not sure that the Republicans want his endorsement, Bruce. He's
right.
So damaged in the state that they're staying as far away from Snyder as they can. In fact, Bruce, this almost looks in Michigan for Snyder. It looks very similar to Nixon after Watergate.
Okay. Nobody wants to touch him. Christine Svensson is here. She is for Marco Rubio. I think she has a question or comment for you.
Oh, how is Marco doing?
Well,
what are your thoughts?
He had some support among some of the rank and file Republicans early on. I don't know the reason, but he seemed to bail out of Michigan a few days ago. He held a few rallies here. He's had a little bit of advertising, but he really hasn't made a big impact here in Michigan.
I think he's so heavily invested in Florida right now. That's probably a big reason.
Tony Parayka is for
be in one spot at one time.
Right.
Tony Parayka is here. He is for Ted Cruz, and he has a question or comment for you, Dick.
I understand that the Cruz campaign has been organizing in the state of Michigan, particularly in those northern suburbs, Bloomfield Hills, and others. Did you see their presence there? And what do you think about Cruz's chances? He's already in second place, according to this somewhat stale poll, but based on your observations.
Well, to me, it looks like Cruz and Trump go after a lot of the same type of voters. Cruz has strength in the northern suburbs, especially in Macomb County, which was the home back in the day of the so-called Reagan Democrats. They've been quiet for 25 years or so, but now the likes of Trump and Cruz have brought them back out, and I think Cruz has a considerable support among those people.
Do you see him rising based on your observations from the poll that was just shown?
I don't. However, if he finishes second, maybe that would be some sort of a moral victory for him. Mm-hmm.
Insofar as the Trump phenomenon, can you feel it? I mean, if we were walking the streets of, let's say, suburban Detroit, I mean, is it something that you can feel? Is there excitement in the air for him?
Well, there's excitement. There's also some trepidation because a lot of us are just learning. We're trying to figure out who the real Donald Trump is, not just some guy who says you're fired on TV. But looking at the two newspapers today in Detroit, Trump's face is on the front page of both of them, even though the Democrats are the ones who are debating in Flint. So, Trump has had a tremendous impact here. And you know what? He didn't really campaign all that much here. He was here for a day and a half, made the rounds on the media, did a couple of rallies, and then scooted out. And it must be because he looks at his polls, 40%, and figures there's no need for me to be here. Let's go on to other pastures.
One question also about a name that is associated with Michigan, and that is Romney. What has been the reaction to Mitt Romney's comments, either talk show callers to the Paul W. Smith show or other stations or other shows on WJR?
The Republicans think that he is, at least the very conservative Republicans think that he is a traitor. The moderate Republicans are kind of quiet. It's almost as if they agree with what Mitt Romney has said, but they haven't come out and said that. The Democrats, of course, as you can imagine, are just rubbing their hands together. I would imagine that whoever the Democratic candidate for president will be, if he or she has a sore throat one day and can't give a speech, they'll just say, roll the tape and play Mitt.
Dick Hafner, listen, thank you very much for joining us. News director of WJR, one of the major radio stations in America, a hometown in Detroit, Michigan. We thank you very much for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. More talking politics when we continue from Chicago.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much. We have some breaking news to report. Bernie Sanders has won the Maine Democratic Caucus this evening. Bernie Sanders winning the Maine Democratic Caucus. I don't think that's too much of a surprise to anyone. But again, on top of his wins yesterday in Nebraska and Kansas, he's obviously got the caucus thing down. And,
I'd like to know how Ted Cruz won Maine and how he and Bernie Sanders won the same state. I think that's pretty funny.
It's like Trump said, it's really close to Canada.
That was it.
That was actually one of his best lines.
Let's go to an old friend of this program. Whenever we go to California, we have him on our program. He is the chairman of the Los Angeles County Democratic Party, Mark Viviades. Mark, nice to have you with us from L.A. tonight.
Hey, Bruce, how are you? By the way, that's the Los Angeles County Republican Party.
I'm sorry. I did not mean to insult Eric Bauman, who was the Democratic chair, who was also on. Okay.
Yes, but, and Eric's a good guy, but I'd rather be on the Republican side.
I know, and we usually have the two of you on, so forgive my my mistake here. But again, you are the Republican chairman of Los Angeles County, and what's happening out there? Who's got the buzz in Southern California in your neck of the woods?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I would say if you asked me 2 weeks ago, it might be a little different. It may have more been towards Marco Rubio, with Cruz and Trump very close as well. However, since Rubio went on the offensive, things have changed. He was seen a couple weeks ago as a very intelligent, articulate, fantastic spokesman, and now he's just seemed as an attack dog, and that really actually has hurt him. Yeah. And around here, it seems like it's kind of between Trump and Cruz.
Okay. Now, traditionally, is there any leading Republican anywhere in the state that has come down for one candidate or the other?
There have been a few. I can't think offhand because there's no big Republican like Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example.
He's for Kasich.
People here still consider him a Republican. he hasn't really come out for anyone yet.
No, he has. No, Mark. He's endorsed John Kasich.
Oh, you know what? I take that back. You're absolutely right. But nobody takes Schwarzenegger seriously, so that has absolutely no sway.
It's not a plus. It's not a plus. When you heard Mitt Romney give his speech earlier this week, as a leader of the Republicans in Los Angeles County, what was your reaction to the tone and tenor of his comments?
I could not have been more disappointed. And what I'm about to say, my comments would apply if Mitt Romney had made the same attack on any of the candidates. So it's not just because he attacked Trump. I'm not committed to a candidate myself yet, but I was so disappointed in Mitt. Before I came out to California about 20 years ago, was very involved with the Massachusetts Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I was part of the grassroots who was working to get him elected in the early 90s when he ran for the U.S. Senate against Ted Kennedy. So I've kind of been around Romney a long time, had a lot of respect for him, great integrity. And one of the disappointing things was that in 2012, there were a lot of people that stayed home and didn't want to go out and vote for Romney because they called him a, quote, rhino. And we were adamant about telling them, you must go out and vote. He's the Republican. A Republican's always better than a Democrat. And now he has come out and said basically what a lot of the people that didn't want to vote for him, he is now saying about one of our top candidates.
Okay, good point. Listen, thanks very much for your call. We do appreciate it. I know you've got a big primary coming up. And by the way, the California primary, which is on June 7th, could actually mean something. It could be significant. And from a historic standpoint, by the way, and I'm old enough to remember, it was the California Republican primary big win by Barry Goldwater that pushed him over the top, that gave him the Republican nomination in 1964, which he accepted at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. So again, I'm going to be back in Los Angeles. We'll have you on closer to primary day because there's going to be a lot going on between now and California. But thanks for joining us tonight, and thanks for your call. Let's go to Paul in Racine, Wisconsin, listening to us on the Internet tonight. Go ahead. You're on the air, Paul.
Can everybody hear me okay?
I can. You sound terrific.
Okay, thanks. I just want to ask everybody, one of the things that I'm not fully understanding, and I guess I would like some clarification on, however, I also believe that I've not seen real leadership out of the chairman of the RNC. I just want kind of everybody's thoughts, or, you know, just ask a question. What would you have liked him to done differently? I just don't think he's shown any leadership. And I guess if you were to press me on that, I would say I would have liked to have seen him put pressure on some of these other candidates to get out a lot sooner. What we're having right now should have happened a month and a half, 2 months ago. What is everybody's thought?
I'm going to go right around the table. We're going to start with Ron Sandeck, who's representing John Kasich, or your co-chair of the Kasich campaign in Illinois. What's your answer to the question?
So I don't know that Rance Priebus could have done anything different. We had an embarrassment of good candidates. We had an embarrassment of riches. I think there were 17 candidates. Scott Walker, to your point, though, Paul, Scott Walker dropped out real quick when he was once considered the guy
right.
that may have challenged Bush.
Yep.
And he called it, and he said, I call on my fellow other candidates who can't win this thing to get out now and make it a one-on-one with whomever it should be. Of course, everyone thought they should have been the one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. Cruz thinks it should be one-on-one. Rubio thought it should be one-on-one. I get it. I think, unfortunately,
Ben Carson,
I don't think Priebus could have done anything different.
Christine Svensson.
I think Priebus's hands have been tied this entire time. He's walking on a tightrope. He's terrified of Trump still going third party. I will fault him for this. I think
third party.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. If he doesn't get the nomination, if he somehow
he said he was going to endorse the candidate from the
this and that.
I would be.
That is not true.
I would be more.
Totally not true.
Oh,
I would be more concerned
totally
about the establishment starting a third party. I mean,
it could happen
you've
either way.
You've got Ben Sasse talking about that. You've got other people talking about Tony.
No. I think that's totally possible.
Rance Priebus, in my opinion, is doing all that a chairman could do. He's trying to avoid internecine warfare here. He's trying to avoid people shooting in different directions. He's trying to keep the flock together and focus on November and defeating whomever the Democrats nominate. That's the key. And all of these candidates that remain have signed on at the beginning of the campaign that they are going to endorse the nominee of the party no matter what.
And they've said so,
and we expect them to keep their word, including Trump.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the hard part.
Yeah, but Paul.
But not Mitt Romney.
He's not the candidate.
No, I know, but there's leading voices within the party that are going to say no to Donald Trump, just as there were leading voices in the Republican Party in 1964 who said, absolutely, we're not going to vote for Barry Goldwater.
That's fine.
And even though Barry Goldwater is rushing towards that nomination, the Eastern establishment put in Bill Scranton of Pennsylvania to try to stop him, and it went nowhere.
That's fine. Those, you know what? Those sore losers can leave the Republican Party. Good riddance. Donald Trump will replace them with 10 better new people who don't have that baggage will actually move this party and this country forward. But, Paul, you're putting me in the awkward position of defending Rance Priebus. I think on this issue, he's absolutely right. He has publicly said, he's absolutely right, that he's letting the Republican voters decide. I think that's absolutely appropriate. You know, Ben Carson dropped out on his own. Actually, in Ben Carson's defense, I think he's a very nice guy, but, I mean, very weak. I don't think President of the United States, right job for him. But interesting little factoid, on Super Tuesday, 11 states, Ben Carson beat John Kasich in 7 of the 11.
What do you think of
still
that?
Still dropped out.
It happened. Ben Carson had more resources than John Kasich, and Kasich, again,
Can I make one other point?
Paul, last word
playing in those states.
Last word to you, Paul.
Well, yeah, thank you. I appreciate everybody's comment. I really don't know how that thing works, but I guess one of the things I'm seeing is that the reaction of the establishment is only making the Trump supporters
dig in their heels even more. And I thought what Mitt Romney did was absolutely appalling. You know what? If Donald Trump gets the nomination, it's like I told my wife, he went through the process and he did it fair and square.
Right.
You're just going to have to grow up and deal with it, the rest of them who don't like him. I mean, he's not my first choice, but he's working the process that's in place.
Does everybody agree with what your comment you said, fair and square? Does everybody, if I know you agree with that, Doug, does everybody agree that Donald Trump is moving along in this campaign fair and square?
Well, he's lying constantly.
Oh, come on. He's the most honest guy in this race.
Okay, that's
by far.
By
far.
Specifically.
I don't know what he says that is not a lie. I mean, he lies about his own record constantly.
Give me an example. Give us an example.
Typically, he will be called out on, for example, the bankruptcies. And then he'll say, well, no, I really didn't create those bankruptcies. I just created jobs.
That's not what he says.
That's not what he says.
He's very open about the fact that at four times he's used the bankruptcy laws with four of his many scores of businesses that he's created.
The Trump University is a huge lie. I mean, he actually claims that that's rated AAA by the Better
Business
Bureau.
So you don't think it's fair and square.
Wait. I just want to know for the record here
that
she has not been able to identify one legitimate lie. Would you like to try again?
Well, she said.
You just mentioned two.
She mentioned two.
Which are
neither one is a lie.
Trump University.
No, he did, but he's not lied about that.
When he said it's a small civil lawsuit, which has not been decided,
it was highly acclaimed.
When he said on the debate,
it's rated
Doug,
A by
Doug,
the Better Business Bureau.
I'm going to give you one, Doug. When he said that Trump University had received an A rating from the Better Business Bureau,
which it has,
that's not true.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. He's producing. Yes, it is.
He'll just keep.
It is currently an A. Yes,
can
it
I,
is.
Can I get a word here?
Tony, it's your turn.
When Donald Trump goes into state after state and said, this is the best state, I love you all, he's lying. He's lying. He is he's pandering.
You never did that when you were a
career running for president.
Pandering is not lying, though.
You never
pandering
did that?
Not lying.
He's lying. He's lying. He's the best. He's the smartest. I'm this and that.
You don't think
that he really loves Iowa?
Wait.
He loves himself. I know that, but... Listen.
No, wait a second. This is the best Ted Cruz campaign could do. The biggest lie that Donald Trump is told is that he's too nice, he's too gracious when he goes to events. Is that your answer, counselor?
1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to take a deep breath, and we're going to remember, with some respect, hopefully, Nancy Reagan.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and thank you very much for joining us. We're going to spend a moment or a segment now talking about the passing of First Lady Nancy Reagan, who died this afternoon in Los Angeles at age 94. And again, we are joined on the phone now by a longtime friend of the Reagan family, Ed Bernane. Ed Bernane has been a political operative in Illinois for many, many years. And Ed, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway. You were a guest on our 35th anniversary show. You were a frequent guest on this program for many years. And you were a guest during a period of time when you were on the road either with President Reagan or ultimately with President George W. Bush. And what are your reflections of Nancy Reagan as you join us tonight?
Well, I think it's sad when anybody passes, but I think that in Mrs. Reagan's case, she had a very fulfilled life. She had a very exciting life. She's a Chicago girl, or raised a good part of her life was in Chicago, as I think many people know. Mm-hmm. And she was a wonderful person to work with and to deal with. And there's no doubt that she was very dedicated and loyal, and just so totally committed to her husband, not just politically, but as a father, as a husband, and as a friend. If any of the staff people, who some of them worked very closely with him, did anything or acted in any way that would cause a problem for President Reagan, or even before Governor Reagan, and I don't know too much about his time as governor and what it was like, but I suspect it was the same. She was very quick to step in and just give that look. And all you needed to do was have Nancy's look, and you knew that you better be careful with what you're doing. But she was a wonderful lady, and I was happy to have had a chance to get to know her. And I'm hoping that the two of them are together now.
Right. And also, we should mention that you obviously served as an advance man to the president, and then you rode on Air Force One with Nancy. There's a great picture of the two of you on Air Force One.
That was actually, yes, it was a very fun trip. It was actually not on Air Force One because the president wasn't there, but there's a Marine code or Air Force code that if the president's not on the plane, it's not Air Force One. But this was a trip when Mrs. Reagan was going down to Arkansas to make a speech to some students or a program. I can't remember all the details. I hate to admit it, but this was more than 30 years ago. I look the same, but other than that, it was. And I'm not sure of all the details, but it was nice to spend time with her. I had a chance during the course of the president's campaigns, both his successful campaign, but 4 years before that, when he competed against Gerald Ford for the nomination, I had a chance to get to know her somewhat. She was. Although she wasn't born in Illinois, she was she considered herself a Chicago girl, and she was the daughter of the adopted daughter of Dr. Loyal Davis, who was one of the great physicians in Illinois, and she was fun to be with, and she got to know the people in Illinois, and I felt, even as I was working my time in the White House and traveling with them, that I had a little bit of an edge over some of the longtime White House staff people because she knew that I was from Chicago.
Okay, well, that's good. So she had an awareness and a relationship with sort of the staff people that surrounded the president. And as you say, if somebody did something wrong, she'd give you the eyebrow, and you knew exactly that you had done something wrong.
I'm sure
you never did anything wrong.
You better back away.
By the way, I should mention that, again, we go back many, many years. And again, this afternoon, by the way, I discovered that in the museum archives, because I met Nancy Reagan in 1980. Ronald Reagan was running for president in the Republican primary, and I was the producer of a show called Noon Break with Lee Phillip at WBBM Television, and Nancy Reagan was a guest on that broadcast. And again, this afternoon in the archives of the museum, we discovered that interview. And if you go to the Facebook for my personal Facebook, Bruce Dumont's Facebook, or Beyond the Beltway, and also to museum.tv, which is the museum website, it's a 12-minute interview done in 1980. And it's a pretty tough interview with Lee Phillip. It's not a patty cake interview. And again, there's some issues that questions that she took exception to. But again, a lot of it was about the early days in Chicago. And again, it's at museum.tv. It's a 12-minute interview done with Lee Phillip and now the late former First Lady of the United States, Nancy Reagan. One of her claims to fame was leading the war against drugs. Did you ever have a chance to talk with her about her passion for that particular subject, Ed?
No, I never did. I personally was never really involved in the policy decisions or the policy activities that either she or the president were involved in. But everybody on the staff and everybody who was on the full-time White House staff in Washington or those who were traveling around the country did get the message as to what issues both of them were really interested in. And so we knew what was what her feelings were, and obviously the people on the staff, this was an issue that they would have been very supportive of. But we didn't have to get really involved. We weren't all we had to do, those of us who were on the ground where they were traveling, at least in my capacity, we just had to make sure that things operated smoothly. And if something went wrong, we would get the eye. But as long as things went smoothly, we didn't really have to pay attention to what he or she was saying. We just had to make sure that it was said smoothly and properly, and that the audience had the opportunity to listen and to react as they chose to react.
There have been a number of stories that have been written in the past. I assume that some of them will be brought up again as the story will dominate news probably for the next several days as we prepare to lay Mrs. Reagan to rest. But the stories were that there was not a close relationship between the Reagan family and the Bush family. And can you, without revealing any inside stuff, I mean, can you acknowledge that there was not a closeness between the families?
Well, yes and no. And I think if you consider the fact that before the Republican convention in Detroit that year, that George Bush and Ronald Reagan were running against each other in the Republican primary. So, and I'm sure that Barbara Bush and Nancy Reagan did not have the fondest feelings toward each other at that time. There was no outward sign of any ill will. But when you consider that this was a challenging, President Reagan had, or Ronald Reagan at that time, had already run in one Republican primary, and he lost to Gerald Ford. And so this was one that was a very difficult time. And once he had the nomination and he reached out to George Bush to be his vice president, I think things gradually started to mend. But it took a little while to do that, and I don't think there was any hostility. I think the two of them were different kinds of people. The Bushes had six or seven children, and some of them were young at that time.
Ed, let me we're running a little bit of time, but I want to ask you this question because it ties into where we are right now and a conversation we had a little bit earlier in the broadcast, and that is when people are competitive in a campaign, there comes a time when you realize that you may need the other guy. Now, again, going back to Detroit, Michigan, which is where Ronald Reagan was nominated at Joe Louis Arena in 1980, Reagan was the outsider. He was not the establishment guy. The establishment guy was Bush. Again, different backgrounds, totally different backgrounds. One patrician, one up from the bootstraps family. So culturally, they didn't necessarily get along. But do you know how that was put together? Because that was not put together easily, was it?
Well, I don't think it was put together easily, but it certainly was not. And I wasn't in that pay grade, and I wasn't involved in any of the discussions that took place. I think that people within the party were very happy that bond was made, and were very happy that Ronald Reagan had selected George Bush, and that was going to be a good team. And of course, history has proven that it was a good team. The personal issues between Nancy Reagan and Barbara Bush were things that we really didn't worry too much about, and they were going to take care of themselves, and they did.
The 11th commandment is something in the early part of this campaign was brought up again and again.
Thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican.
What would Ronald Reagan say with campaign 2016?
I would say right now that he probably feels that he got out of this race at the right time, that he's happy that he's not involved in it.
And Nancy Reagan would feel the same way?
I think that she would feel the same way. I suspect that, in fact, I think the Bushes feel the same way, too, that the whole thing is such a it's unbecoming Republicans, and I'm not using that as their expression. It's just I think there's a feeling that this is a little bit off the track.
Of course, Reagan did run against a sitting Republican president. I mean, you can't do that without saying why he shouldn't be president anymore. I mean, I understand that, you know, the 11th commandment, it's all well and good, but he was really talking about, I think we know, you know, personal attacks.
Well, and the point is in that
I don't think it was personal attacks.
He was running against an appointed president, a fill-in-the-vacancy president. And it wasn't as if that was a situation that he was challenging an elected president.
Ed Murnane, I thank you very much for joining us tonight. Former advance man to President Ronald Reagan, also served in that capacity for President Bush. But again, someone that knew Nancy Reagan. And again, in our discussion this evening for this portion of our program, we want to spend some time talking about the passing of Nancy Reagan. Obviously, it'll be quite a bit of news for the next several days. It'll also perhaps affect the race for president. There's a funeral to be planned, and I'm sure a lot of our Republican as well as Democratic candidates were likely to be there, including Hillary Clinton. Ed Murnane, thank you very much. Also, Christine Svensson and Ron Sadek and Tony Parayka and Doug Ibendahl have all been with us tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Again, the Super Duper Tuesday is coming up on the 15th of March. And again, in addition to Illinois, obviously the national media is focusing on what happens in Ohio. Must-win situation for John Kasich in Florida. Must-win situation for Marco Rubio. But again, Illinois will vote that day. Missouri will vote that day. And North Carolina will vote that day. Although all the, in fact, last night I was amazed that in all of the results as they were looking ahead to a Super Duper Tuesday on the 15th of March, I mean, they ignored all states except Ohio and Florida, as if there's no race going on. But we do this program, as you know, from Chicago, and virtually all of the candidates, I think, are going to be in Chicago this coming week. Ted Cruz is coming. Tell us about Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz is going to be in Chicago on March 11th for a big fundraiser down at the Hilton Hotel on Michigan Avenue from 5 to 7 p.m. It's a Friday event. His wife, Heidi, is going to be here on the 7th and 8th, traveling in North East Illinois, and we'll be covering various events. I think a Lincoln Day dinner, perhaps as well, that's coming up somewhere. And you know, this event for Cruz on March 11th is probably the main fundraiser before the election, and we hope that it will kind of raise the energy level among the volunteers to really come out and do some door to door and phone banking and help Ted Cruz to win in Illinois.
John Kasich is also coming to Illinois.
Yeah.
Ron Sadek.
Wednesday, March 9th. He's doing two town halls. He has this very old school folksy way of, you know, brings out a chair and a bottle of water and talks and takes questions and interacts. He's doing one in Palatine and one in Lisle on the 9th. I think he has a fundraiser in Chicago as well. So he'll do, you know, the media tour and same thing as Tony just said, try and get volunteers to go knock doors, make calls. And, you know, spread the word.
And the Donald has a big rally in Chicago next Friday.
UIC Pavilion, Friday night. It starts at 6. Doors open at 3. I would get there early. It's sure to be packed. I would be surprised if everybody could even get in. It's going to be another one of these huge packed events.
Expecting protesters.
Sure he has them. He has fun with those. But you go to DonaldJTrump.com. You know, Donald Trump is self-funding. He doesn't want your money. He just wants your support and your enthusiasm. Go to DonaldJTrump.com. Go to schedule. You'll find you do have to print out a paper ticket, but it's free. And you know, get
I thought
he
was selling hats. Wasn't he selling hats?
Oh, he wants your money.
He actually doesn't. He's self-funding. The only one.
Marco Rubio, is he coming to Chicago?
So he is not self-funding, Mr. Trump. He is self-funded somewhat, but no, he's accepting a lot of donations. And in the last
small
quarter,
he doesn't want to return like a $10 or a $15 donation. But he has
2015, he raised more
Wait a second.
Marco Rubio has been here quite a bit.
But is he coming next week? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe he will be here before March 15th, but I've not gotten the official word yet. But go to MarcoRubio.com for more information.
She hit Donald Trump. I just want to clarify this. Donald Trump is self-funding. You know, he has said, you know, if he gets a $10 or $15 donation, you know, it's kind of hard to send that back. You know, he appreciates that. But he is actually, folks have actually tried to start super PACs to support his candidacy. And he and his lawyers have contacted those people and said, cut it out. You know, that is a huge story that he does not get credit for.
No, I think he should.
Is that he is anti-super PAC.
You know, the one question that I would ask, and by the way, I agree with that. I've said it on this program. I think that's one of the most enduring things about him is the issue of self-funding.
But he's loaning money to himself. He's not gifting it to himself.
You don't know that. You know, it looks. But more importantly, the only bad thing about the Friday event is that UIC Pavilion is great. But he really wanted to get the United Center, you know, bigger venue. He would have packed that as well. But unfortunately, it wasn't available.
So you're
available.
Not saying he's not donating? He's not donating?
No, he's not. He's not funding his campaign. He's loaning money. He's making loans to his campaign. There's a difference because you expect the loan to be repaid.
What
he's going to take government money in the general election if he's a nominee. He's going to repay himself back.
This is typical Ted Cruz camp. You know, whatever.
If you're worth $9 billion, as someone says that he is, why on earth would you be lending money to your campaign? You would be putting $500 million in there.
Once again,
like Bloomberg
it's called, did. Once again, it's called making things up. You guys are hysterical. Your candidates are losing by so much. You guys are hysterical
with making things up. Doug, you know what the question I would like to have asked, and that is that if he is elected, is he going to continue not doing any fundraising for him? Will he be a president that doesn't raise money for himself or his party?
Oh, I can't speak for him. I don't know. And for the general, I don't know. I mean, I would hope he would for the general. I mean, I see sometimes now, you know, here's the amazing thing about Donald Trump. He's winning states all over this country. He's winning blue states. He's winning red states. He's winning purple states. He is growing this party like no one has. I think he's even exceeding what Reagan did. It is unbelievable. But what's really incredible about it, Donald Trump has not even played his strongest cards yet.
To talk more about
ads, about all the things he's built and all the jobs he's already created. He's actually held that back. He's not even done that yet. I would love if he
does that at every debate. That's all he talks about.
Well, no, I mean more specifics about specific projects, all the specific buildings
and things he's done.
Right. All the people he's employed. That's why the blue collar folks love him. That's why he's going to do so well in Michigan because people, you know, the entrenched, the do nothing politicians don't get it. But the people who want a better America, want a better job for their families. They are with Donald Trump. That's why he's running away with this thing.
Do you think Ted Cruz is a do-nothing politician?
I do think he's a do-nothing politician.
Listen, Ted, excuse me. Is he going to filibuster the whole show here?
Go.
Ted Cruz has worked as an attorney. He is an attorney. He trained in best schools. He practiced law. He was a prosecutor. He was an attorney general in Texas.
But never created a job for anybody.
He supervised vast bureaucracies in the public sector.
Tony's making the case. We're all lawyers here, and what we lawyers sometimes don't get is that usually lawyers are terrible leaders. I will actually give you that Ted Cruz probably is a pretty good lawyer. If I was against somebody, he would probably be. His tenaciousness would probably be a good lawyer, but he is not a leader.
The idea that Donald Trump is looking out for the little man is just absolutely laughable. He has made himself rich off the backs
like
of illegal immigrants and small people.
He's also attacked little guys.
Yes,
he is.
He sued his own relatives. He's lost the five under the 5'9" voters.
Listen, our thanks to Christine Svensson. You are for Marco Rubio. We're going to have you back here in a couple of weeks to talk about that. Ron Sadek, thank you very much, co-chair of the John Kasich campaign. And Tony Parayka is a supporter of Ted Cruz. Doug Ibadal, a supporter of Donald Trump. And again, folks, all Republicans tonight. Next week, we're going to be talking about the results in Michigan and Idaho and Mississippi. And looking forward to Super Duper Tuesday coming up on the 15th, the Ides of March, where Illinois, along with Ohio and Florida and Missouri and North Carolina, will be the next stage. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a 4-diamond hotel experience with a convenient location?
It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.